Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm David Metzger, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. And although you're not really fat.
No, I'm just, you know, it's like having, fat. I'm just having, like having Kristen back from last week.
That's right. Only you know? She's prettier than you.
Oh, well, absolutely.
And
I hope so.
Since we're talking about fatness, I'll tell you, you know what's funny? As I discovered, I'm not morbidly obese.
No?
Yeah, I found there's a calculator online. Because,
really?
You know, if it's online, it's accurate.
Well, it must be true.
Yeah. But, like, you put in your height, and it gives you the body mass index. I'm just obese.
You're
I'm not morbidly obese, but I guess I still have to be like slightly obese, then overweight, then slightly overweight.
Sweet. Let's celebrate. Let's go get a cake.
That's right. Yeah. Brownies and all that good stuff. Yeah. Cause I have lost some weight lately. So, but before we move on, let's talk about how to get a hold of us. Fatguysatthemovies.com. You can hit us up on iTunes, go up there, write a review. Neil is, he's still in Sundance, so he's not communicating with us. We have fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can call us on the voicemail. We won't get to it until next week when Neil gets back from Sundance. But give us a call anyway, 614-388-8735. And I'd like to welcome Dave to the show.
It's
or David,
it is
your professional name.
Sure. It is good to be back. Do I understand I'm the lucky winner?
Yes.
The 100th episode of Fat Guys?
The 100th episode.
We have Sweet. Do I get a prize?
Times. No. You get pride.
I get pride
and glory,
the privilege of being on being an unofficial fat guy.
That's right. So no, that's cool. It's good to have Dave back. It's been a while since we've needed a guest host anyways, because I think the last time we had guest hosts was South by Southwest last year.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
like
I mean
March
that's,
or something. Yeah, like
that was the last time I was on the show.
Okay. Yeah. So
right. When Neil was stalking was Jessica Alba and Kristen Bell, I think.
Kristen
right?
Bell was who he had pictures with.
Yeah.
Which is
that's right, and she looked terrified, right?
Yeah, she had that look, like it's sort of like the pretty girl at high school who is in your chemistry class and just by luck of the draw ends up getting you as the chemistry partner, and then you see her at a football game and you're like, hey, how you doing?
Right.
What up with that hydrochloric acid? And she's like, yeah, ha ha ha, hi. That was the look on Kristen Bell's face. And plus, she's like 4'2", and Neil's
not,
6 foot.
Yeah.
So he's not as tall as you, Dave.
No, but he's still pretty tall.
He's taller than
me. At least
me.
6'1".
Yeah,
6'2".
He's up there. And he's got the big bushy beard. I think she thought he was going to eat her. just snap her head off like a twig. Like King Kong.
Is she really 4 foot something?
No, she's 5'2". I mean, she's short.
Gosh.
She's a tiny girl.
Is there anyone in Hollywood that's over 5'8"?
No,
you know,
well, it's weird because
Morgan Freeman, Charlize Theron, and then everyone else is.
Yeah, you meet these people, and like I had a chance to interview the High School Musical kids like way before they became famous.
Uh-huh.
And it was like little, you know, it was like little figurines walked in the room. I mean, literally, they walk in. It was like Ashley Tisdale, Lucas Grabeel, and Monique Coleman walk in the room. We didn't even know who they were because we just thought somebody's kids wandered in. Because they were so tiny. And then I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, we're supposed to be talking to you. Okay, let's pull out the microphone.
Wow.
So that has nothing to do with the movies this week.
No.
No. But we have a thin week. Last week we had like 18 movies come out.
Yeah, it was like 4 new issues and a whole bunch of...
Defiance was an expansion.
Oscar wannabe rollouts.
Yes. And speaking of Oscars, we'll talk a little more about the Oscars later and the Oscar nominations and the big surprises that have come up. But before we do that, let's move on to our first review, which is going to be really short. So we'll banter after this. And I'll ask Dave how he's doing. But first one is Underworld, Rise of the Lycans. We go back in time to the beginning of the werewolf-vampire feud featuring a different hot chick in tight leather.
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them. Envied them. And for what? To be treated like an animal. We are not animals! Is this what you want? We can be slaves, or we can be Lycans!
Now, neither of us have seen this.
And I'm actually really disappointed about that. I am not the biggest fan of the Underworld series. Actually, we'll admit I didn't see the second one, but you know, putting Bill Nighy and Michael Sheen at the top and Rhona Mitra in there for cosmetic effect,
yeah,
for lack of a better word, I'm like, I was interested in this. I wanted to see where they were going with it. I don't know why they chose not to screen this one when they screened the other two.
Well, and what's though an interesting piece of trivia about the second one was it was screened for us because over here in flyover country, they show it to us like a week ahead. But like for when they do like the Reuters press and when you see like, you know, Phil Hammond's pull quote and all that, that stuff they screen like a month out or more. That was like one of the first movies of recent years that they just suddenly didn't screen for the real early press, and they only did like week ahead screenings, and that made news because it did well.
It did well.
Yeah, it did well, and then they started. And of course, Hollywood was the idiot reporters were like, "Well, that's because they didn't screen it." And I'm like, "No, that's because people wanted to see Kate Beckinsale in leather kick some werewolves in the teeth."
Right, right, and so. Why didn't they change their minds? I mean, once it did well, I mean, you'd think there might be a last-minute screening that pops up on this on the grid, or
I don't know. It early January. There's so many movies they don't screen in January.
This year seems much worse than the last couple, though. Have you noticed that?
Well, last week we got everything except My Bloody Valentine was screened.
Right, but I mean, in years past, they would screen us anything, you know, like Happily Never After, Codename the Cleaner, movies that had absolutely no business being screened
for us. They wouldn't screen. Well, but see, last year they didn't screen Rambo, they didn't screen Strange Wilderness, they didn't screen One Missed Call. There was a lot of, I'd say at least half the movies in January they didn't screen.
It's funny you mentioned those too, because I was going through the Rotten Tomatoes list of all the highest rated.
And One Missed Call was.
And the moldy ones, and there are a handful that get zero numbers on Rotten Tomatoes. And One Missed Call and Strange Wilderness both got zeros.
Yeah. Well, I remember when there was a time where there was like only like one or two movies that held that distinction. And now there's like a handful every year.
Right. And do you wonder if that's, you know, do they really deserve that rating? I suppose they probably do.
I've seen them.
You've seen them?
I can attest that those. Well, because what it is another critic in town who's also on Rotten Tomatoes, Mark Pfeiffer from Real Times, he made the astute observation to me the other night, because we were talking about that, and he said Rotten Tomatoes it only gives you that 75% tomato meter rating. It's only based on whether you up thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing. It only measures whether you liked it or not. It doesn't measure degree.
Yes.
So like last week I thought there were some things I liked about Paul Blart. I thought it was stupid. It was a dumb movie, but it was a fat guy falling down, and I could kind of get into that. But I still only gave it like 2.5 stars out of 5.
Right.
Which warrants a negative review. Although yes. I wasn't totally negative on it. I was just kind of, to me, it was like right in the middle.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think when it came to the movie Cars, I think my review, I mean, they don't show quotes for us, but my review wound up being on the fresh side of the meter. And that's my least favorite of the Pixar movies by a country mile. And I was like, no. I really don't want this to be considered a fresh review, but I guess because that's where I put it star-wise,
they considered that
good. I'm like,
it's not as good as The Incredibles, but according to the tomato meter, it might as well be.
Right. So I suppose if you want to make sure that you're on the right side of the fence, if you're on a 5-star scale like you and I are, you know, put it under 3.
Yeah. Yeah, even though technically I think you're only supposed to 3.5 is supposed to get three stars. Cause it's supposed to be like 70% or above.
Oh, anyways, really?
That's semantics. But Underworld's going to get a preemptive.
Preemptive sucks. Sorry, guys.
We didn't see it, so it must suck. Don't go see this movie. When we come back, we're going to talk about the movie they did screen for us. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We had a duck out with no review of Underworld, Rise of the Lycans.
Welcome to January.
Yeah. Although I'll tell you, I got to interview Rona Mitra at Comic-Con.
Really?
And she is hot.
She's okay.
She's not what, you know, there's some actresses that if you had a chance to meet them, that you see on screen, you're just like, oh, they're hot. And then you meet them in person, you're just like, yeah.
Scary clown.
Yeah. No. Rona Mitra's hot. Although she has lumpy knees. It's weird. She was wearing this short skirt.
I really...
Fantastic legs.
You lumpy noticed knees. Her lumpy knees.
She had lumpy knees. But she had a tattoo on her like ankle, which was cool.
I bet that hurts. There's not a whole lot of extra skin there.
No, it doesn't.
That's
Do you have
straight
any
on the bone. No.
No, I don't either. Although I've got enough fat stored up to, you know, I don't think I'd feel it.
I always, my wife and I always joke about what the next, you know, what our generation's going to look like in 20 years when all those little kitten tattoos turn into like, you know, old sagging tigers or whatever.
And how the tattoos, the ink fades after a while. It just looks like the old man smoking.
Right. The hummingbird turns into a vulture.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait for 40 or 50 years from now to see all these grannies in nursing homes with the tattoo on the lower back.
Yes.
That's going to be hilarious.
Oh, I know.
Be like, she'll be like in her drawers and be like, I got to pick this up. And some old man be like, hey, you look hot in her drooping
drawers. Might as well be a bullseye.
Yeah, exactly. The bullseye right over to the Depends.
That's right.
So how's it going, Dave?
It's going well. It's going well. You know, we're just, bullseye still chugging along. We're, you know, keeping busy with the movies and the music and all that fun stuff.
Still getting blocked from Panera Breads around the country?
Yeah, probably. It's funny. I every day I get a new list or someone telling me, like, I think. Oh, I probably shouldn't have gone on record with that.
I'll bleep it out.
Okay, good. Eyes shifting nervously.
Like, you'd be like, well, like the studio, like, I'll just put like some other studio name in there.
Yeah, they can't access our site at work, which I think is hilarious.
Wow, I can't believe a studio would like block porn.
I know, of all the things. I mean, I can see a brokerage or, you know, any other
like an elementary
corporate
school.
Office. Elementary school definitely shouldn't be able to access this. But,
well, but you guys, everyone, it says it's adult content. I've been to the site.
Yeah.
And I've seen adult content elsewhere on the web.
Uh-huh.
This is not adult content.
No, it's not. It's clean. There's no nudity on
the
site.
It's 13-year-old content.
It is. Yeah.
It's literally, you won't see anything on your site that you won't see in a PG-13 movie.
No, absolutely.
I mean, you don't see any, no jumbly bits.
Nothing. No. Nothing like
Which
that.
Which is why I don't go to Bullseye. I go find my porn elsewhere.
Well, that's what made me crazy. We actually used to do a thing with a radio station, and one of the DJs was saying, in exchange for us calling in, they would, you know, talk about the site, and they would say, oh, it's great. You get, you know, reviews and, you know, porn. And I'm like, I'm listening to this, and I told our president, I'm like, do you hear what they're saying about us? Like, no, we don't have any
See,
of that
if you're
stuff.
Gonna get blocked for porn, you should at least have some porn on
make it
site.
Something good. Yeah,
exactly.
Agreed.
That's good. But you're doing anything special going on in Bullseye right now?
Well, we've got a few interesting things in the hopper. I just launched a piece called Your Favorite Band Sucks, where all the individual writers and the music staff kind of pick one band that they just don't get. And they're speaking solely for themselves. But we all have that one band that everybody, you know, that is generally considered to be brilliant or ahead of their time or what have you. And we just kind of took a bunch of them down. The Doors, U2, Frank Zappa.
Which one was yours?
Radiohead. I did The Doors and Pearl Jam, much to my editor's dismay, because
he
loves Pearl Jam.
Don't you? You also had a beef against Sonic Youth, didn't you?
No. I mean, I can see where some people would be into them. I'm just not one of them.
I just remember there was a line from Juno last year, and that you got
that cracked me. Yes, yeah. Oh, right, because she fell in love with the Carpenters cover, which is my favorite thing that Sonic Youth's ever done. Yeah, and then she said, "By the way, I bought one of their records, and they suck.
It's just noise."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought that was very funny.
Oh, cool.
We also got the TV Girlfriends piece that's going to be unveiling at the end of January.
Now, what is that again?
We kind of went through various shows from the last 40 years, and we broke characters down into 10 categories, and we picked which ones would be like our most ideal girlfriends based on personality type, intelligence, sense of humor, that kind of thing. And so we're gonna have a vote, actually. So every month we're gonna list 10 women. We're gonna have the readers pick which one they would want as their most ideal girlfriend, and then at the end of the year, we're going to pit them all against each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you get like lesbian talk shows girlfriends in there at all? Because there's a lot of those.
What?
Well, TV. You got Roseanne, Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, no. She's
a lesbian.
We're doing characters. So, I mean, we're not going to actually,
Ellen DeGeneres was a lesbian on her TV show.
Eventually.
Yeah.
No, she didn't make the list. Very sorry. I like Ellen very much. Loved her in Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
But there were some other women that just were a little better looking than she was.
Well, we'll go to bullseye.com to see if you're as long as you're not offended by women in like bikinis.
Occasionally, yes.
And if you're listening to this
horror show, odds are that's not the case.
Yeah, and if you've been to our site, Yeah, right. You see less. You see more of me than you see of the women on the site on Bullseye. We should get back to reviewing movies.
Yes,
don't you think?
We actually saw this one.
We saw this one. This is Inkheart. Brandon Fraser plays a man who can make books come true by reading them aloud. It's a fantasy because we all know Brandon Fraser can't read.
This is the story you have been waiting to hear.
Maybe you'll find it here.
Find what?
That book you're always looking for.
What if you had the power to bring a book to life?
Inkheart.
Simply by reading it aloud.
Take it to the dungeon. Lock him up.
Unicorn. Flying monkeys. What is this place?
I prefer a story that has the good sense to stay on the page where it belongs.
I'm going
to
let you take first crack. What do you think?
I love the premise of this book. I like any children's story that encourages children to use their imaginations and to not think that the strongest or the fastest or, you know, the most, you know, the most well-built person is going to survive. Mm-hmm. To use your wits and to think, be clever, think, you know, differently than everyone else. I love those kinds of stories. I just felt like this one wasn't executed as well as I wanted it to be. Yeah. I mean, you've got two master British thespians in this movie, one of them an Oscar winner.
Brandon Fraser.
Yes, Brendan Fraser is a master British thespian. We're talking about Helen Mirren and Jim Broadbent. And
Paul Bettany's in there, too.
Bettany, yes, he's a fine actor. And
Andy Serkis plays a bad guy.
And Andy Serkis outacts all of them, in my opinion. Fraser, my big question, when any open letter to any studio that wants to cast Brendan Fraser, have you seen Nathan Fillion? Because to me, Nathan Fillion is a much better actor than Fraser. I mean, if you were looking for a poor man's Harrison Ford, get Nathan Fillion.
Well, but Nathan Fillion doesn't have the cheese factor Brendan Fraser has, apparently.
Is that what's getting him all these gigs?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's okay in certain things, but he's kind of like Jerry O'Connell. You know, there's a certain level of cheese that he can't escape.
I just don't think he reads his lines the way that he should read them.
Yeah.
And I think this all goes back to being, you know, they cast him in The Mummy because he was cheap, I'm assuming.
Oh, he was good looking.
And yes, he's good looking. And he seems like a very decent guy. There's nothing personal against him. Yeah. I just think that Fillion could do those roles better. That's just my opinion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I like Fillion too, but he hasn't had that breakout success yet.
No, but I mean, neither had Fraser when he got the role in The Mummy. So, that's, I mean, you always need to give him that one shot.
Well, he had George of the Jungle. I mean, Brendan Fraser did have George of the Jungle and Encino Man. He had enough hits that people knew who he was. But outside of sort of like your sci-fi fan base, I don't know how many people know who Nathan Fillion is.
I also wonder if Fraser just has this long-term contract with New Line, because I think is this the last movie that New Line's putting out under their name?
It was the last one they greenlit.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know production schedule, if there's going to be another one coming out, but I think this is the last big blockbuster one.
Okay. Because he was in Journey to the Center of the Earth last year.
Mm-hmm. But The Mummy's Universal.
The Mummies are Universal, but he also did Blast from the Past. And that was a New Line movie, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
So I think it's the last one I can think of. I don't know why I remember that.
Wow.
Kill me.
this is the thing that bothered me about Inkheart. It's a fantastic idea. I haven't read the book. I'm sure the book's really good. And I think you're right with the execution. In a movie like this where a guy is able to put people in and out of stories and books, I kind of expected more stuff to happen in the book. You would expect, if they traditionally make a movie out of this, you have the big, like, first 30 minutes take place in the book, and it's epic and it's huge, sort of like Bolt, where it starts out in the movie of Bolt.
Right.
And then they take you out of it. So they get the really awesome stuff out of the way. Whereas this one is just, throughout the whole first maybe two-thirds of the movie, they're hinting at cool stuff that can happen, and it never really happens. They got flying monkeys in cages, you know, and a unicorn in a stall.
Right.
You know? And yeah, things kind of come out at the end, but by the time it's at the end, it's sort of like the way they sort of figure things out, I'm like, I would have thought of that like months, years ago. If he had this power for years, why didn't he do what they did at the end earlier?
Well, I mean, he deliberately didn't read because he didn't want to send anyone away. I mean, one of the things in the plot that we're not explaining is that when they bring something out of the book, something from our world gets transferred into the book. So,
which they didn't.
Who
totally
got sent into the Wizard of Oz? Who got sent into?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw who got sent into Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, but we never saw who wound up in the Wizard of Oz. And there are multiple references in that. Yeah, you know, it's too bad. Too bad. I wanted to like it more than I did.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give it a sucks.
For yeah, me. Me too.
So
me too. Pity.
Sorry, Brendan Fraser.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And we're back, and we're now entering the adult portion of the program, and by that I mean we're going to talk about a movie that stars two people over the age of 50.
Two old people.
Old people.
And then you throw in James Brolin and you got another old person.
Yeah. It's like the street that I live on. There's us, and then there's like a whole bunch of empty nesters that are like 60 plus.
Those people with the tattoos on the back of their, you know,
yes.
Over their Depends.
That's right. Oh man.
Was that something we talked about actually did we talk about that in a previous segment, or was that off the air? Did I just completely throw our listeners into a loop?
No, that should be on the air.
Okay.
I mean, they should know what we were talking about, but thanks. I'm not going to get that mental image out of my head next time I see my neighbors.
They should know about Ethel and her skanky tattoos.
Yes, exactly. Yikes. Eek. We're talking about Last Chance Harvey, in case you haven't figured that out yet. Yes.
In this one, Dustin Hoffman plays a man whose life falls apart on a trip to England, and he finds a way to put it back together.
Dad, for the past few years, Brian's been a really big part of my life.
Salute.
I'm gonna ask him to give me away tomorrow.
I have a Johnny Walker.
That'll help.
Help as much as that trashy novel and a glass of Chardonnay. Oh, I'm sorry. That was out of line. It's just that I lost my job, and my daughter, who's getting married today, wanted her stepfather to give her away.
Fair enough. You win.
Let me make it up to both of us, and I'll buy you lunch.
Thanks very much, but I don't know you, and you don't know me.
That's exactly why we should have lunch together.
When is this actually coming out?
Well, I thought it was going wide this week, but we were talking off the air, and you thought that it actually went wide last week. Is that right?
It dropped off of some release schedules. It's already been out in like New York and L.A.
Right.
Because it was an award film from last year. And Dustin Hoffman, and was Emma Thompson also nominated for a Golden Globe?
Yes.
Both of them were, right?
I'm not sure about Dustin, but Emma definitely was.
Okay. So it's actually out there, and we got to, since we're influential members of the entertainment media, we got screeners of that.
We did get screeners of that, which I watched last night.
Which we will not upload onto the internet.
No, absolutely not. Although that doesn't seem to stop a lot of our peers from doing it. I have friends who tell me that the day after those screeners hit the film critics, they're up on all the BitTorrent sites.
Yeah.
I guess there's a way you can get into the coding and get rid of the watermark. I don't know how to do it, and I don't care to find out.
I'm just curious as to how much they actually police that.
Obviously not that much, or we'd be hearing stories about writers getting busted, right? And I never hear about them getting in trouble.
Yeah, it's like when they say, like, for example, like certain movies were not allowed to review early, like Disney. Disney's
right.
Real,
yes.
Real stickler about not reviewing before the release date. And you still go to Rotten Tomatoes and you see people posting. You see a half dozen reviews or a dozen reviews before it opens of any Disney movie.
Yeah, they did that with The Prestige, too. They, like, threatened bodily harm, firstborn children, all of that stuff. But I don't recall anything happening to those people who posted early.
Yeah. Hmm. Although I do know somebody who did get in a certain mild amount of trouble for an early Ratatouille review. And it was just they had to pull it.
Oh, but wasn't that because it came out earlier overseas?
No.
They just posted it early.
That was Fantastic Four that you're thinking of.
But the
Ratatouille, it was a Ratatouille review, and I knew somebody who actually they were asked to pull the review.
Whoops. So,
which was silly because it was like an A+.
Right, exactly. You know,
it was like the greatest movie ever.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't want wouldn't want that word to leak out early.
Yeah, we don't want people to think that this is a good movie.
Their movie's awesome. Right.
Yeah.
So Last Chance Harvey.
Yes, Last Chance Harvey. I'll take first crack on this one.
Go for it.
I was sort of mildly impressed with it at the beginning. I was like, this is sort of just this guy, and yeah, it's depressing. And it's like a Punky Brewster episode where this guy played by Dustin Hoffman, just everything that can possibly go wrong with him goes. He like loses his job. He goes to England and is to be at his daughter's wedding, and she's like, "Oh, I'm having my father-in-law. The guy's going to be my
stepfather.
Yeah, give me away." And it's just like, Everything goes wrong, and then suddenly it just turns into this warm, cheerful little ditty, you know?
Right.
It's just sweet, you know? And I liked it. I mean, I thought it was cute. What I liked about it was it didn't try to be bigger than what it was.
That's fair. Yeah. No, it didn't. The first part of that movie, as a parent, is my worst nightmare. You know, the father that's estranged from everyone else in his family, from his wife and from his kids. And
are you afraid you're going to end up like that?
Well, isn't every father terrified that they're going to wind up like that? And they just kick him constantly in the first third of this movie. I'm going, oh man, please tell me it gets better than this. And it does. I mean, I do. I still adore Emma Thompson. My biggest problem, I think, with the movie was that it only takes place over the span of a weekend. And those movies that take place over a day or a couple days, I just don't feel like that's enough time to really get invested or get to know a character. Yeah. And so I always find myself kind of mentally checking out because I'm like, okay, well, this is cute, but we're still just scratching the surface. We don't really know if it's going to work out.
Oh, yeah, it could completely crumble.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think all the happiness could come crashing down on them.
Rather quickly. Yeah. So, I mean, you understand, Emma's character's reluctance to,
get involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And that's sort of the magic of movies is you don't have to sit around after Happily Ever After. Well, there was funny, even though Speed 2 Cruise Control was like one of the worst movies of that year. That
how
came
on
out,
earth are we going from Last Chance Harvey to Speed 2?
I have a point. There's a scene in there where she meets her boyfriend played by
Jason Patrick.
I was going to say Eric Roberts. I'm like, no, not him. Jason Patrick. And she's referring to the character of Keanu Reeves from the first movie.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, it never works out after a situation like that. After these extreme situations, the relationship never works. And I thought, as bad of Cruise Control, as unrealistic as Speed 2 Cruise Control was, there was a real gem of truth in that.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, and that's obviously also a follow-up line to, you know, a thread that went throughout the first Speed movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it was kind of a callback.
Yeah.
But it was also a perfectly valid explanation for why he wasn't there.
Exactly. And that's the way that's why I like movies. I did like Last Chance Harvey. I liked it a lot just because it was very sweet at the end. And you're right. Things could just crumble. It went from, but it had this like manic depressant or depressant manic thing where it just goes from being depressing, which had flashbacks to Tootsie. Did you see, you've seen Tootsie?
Oh yeah.
It's like the beginning of Tootsie where he's like, you have to play a tomato and he's like losing acting jobs and he's getting fired. I'm like, this is, he's going to start dressing up as a woman going to England. Priscilla, queen of the tour bus or
tour bus. Oh my gosh. Okay, so from Last Chance Harvey to Speed 2 to Priscilla to Tootsie.
To Tootsie, yeah. It
Kevin Bacon wasn't in any of those movies.
No, he wasn't.
I don't think. Wait.
He needs to get a job.
He wasn't. Right. Now, I'm not saying I didn't like Last Chance Harvey because I did, but I didn't love it.
What's your final grade on it?
Kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks. You know, I'm going to agree with you. Kind of rocks. It wasn't awesome, but again, like I said, it didn't try to be any bigger than it was, so that's right. Kind of, you know, wasn't going to be monumental.
No, and that's fine.
Yeah, I generally don't like Dustin Hoffman when he kind of plays himself, but he did a good job.
I can understand that. Yeah. You know, I don't have anything against that either. But I get where you're coming from. Yeah. Sometimes he needs a muzzle sometimes.
All right. So well, let's move on. I don't know what Last Chance Harvey's going to do for the box office, but. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, first of all, you were telling me earlier at our Inkheart screening that you totally predicted the whole Paul Blart juggernaut.
I did that based on the fact that a good friend of mine has an 11-year-old son, and they came over for dinner a couple weeks before the movie came out, and he was dying to see that movie. Right. And his father was pretty excited about it, too, and I hadn't even seen a trailer for it yet, and they just kind of looked at me cross-eyed like, how have you not seen a trailer? I'm like, well, I guess I'm not watching the same TV that you are.
Either that or you just skip through the commercials on the DVR.
Right. Oh, which I do because my wife, who worked in advertising, hates watching commercials.
Mm.
Go figure.
Of course, because she knows exactly what they're doing to you.
Right. Right. So, but I finally did see one and went, oh boy,
yeah,
that looks ugly. At the same time, you know, I got a sense from talking to my friends that there was a great interest in the movie. So no matter how bad it was, that first weekend was going to kill. And
yeah.
Boy, did it.
Yeah, it did. Well, and what I thought was amazing, and this kind of reminded me of It was the Christmas weekend where Marley and Me beat what the late
everything.
The last, it beat the record for Christmas opening day. But if you actually look at it, like, not only did that, but like Benjamin Button beat it, Bedtime Stories beat it, everything beat the old record. And that's the same thing what happened this weekend.
I was amazed at really how well everything that came out on Christmas did, but particularly that Marley and Me beat everything. I never would have guessed that.
I figured it was going to be Marley and Me versus Bedtime Stories just because it was a family. It was the only family thing. Everything else was Nazis.
Everything was Nazis. Even the spirit had Nazis. I thought Bedtime Stories would have the edge because it's a Disney movie. I didn't think it wasn't as good as Marley and Me, but it didn't have a dead dog in it either.
Well, yeah.
Whoops. Sorry. Did I spoil anything?
If you haven't seen it by now. but no, I was happy to see My Bloody Valentine do well, simply because I like a good 3D horror movie.
Sure. Who doesn't?
And it was done totally for the gimmick. I have no idea how much it sucked in 2D, but in 3D, it was great.
Yeah.
It had like a sex scene in there.
Oh, awesome.
It had like a 5-minute scene of this girl running around naked being chased by the killer. And I'm like, and it was in 3D.
Fantastic.
So what's not to love? It spoke to me.
Man, I gotta check that out.
Yeah. See it in 3D. It's literally worth seeing in 3D just because the 3D has gotten so good. No double vision, you know, no eye strain.
Right.
You know, even if you think back to, was it about a year and a half ago when Beowulf came out?
Beowulf.
That had a little bit of eye strain to it. Now, they've perfected it.
Yeah, I thought Journey to the Center of the Earth looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
And this just gets me all excited for the next Final Destination movie.
Yes. Well, the other thing with like My Bloody Valentine is the Lionsgate logo with all the gears and everything.
Oh.
When that thing comes up in 3D, looks spectacular.
Oh, so you know what? They've got to make the next Saw movie in 3D.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
I think it would be awesome. They could do that.
I mean, this is going to be the last one, right?
No.
Oh, please.
Not if it makes money. Yeah, are you kidding me?
No, I know.
There was a movie called Friday the 13th, Part 4, The Final Chapter, and they made six more movies.
At least six more. You're
before
right.
They started like reinventing.
I know. You're right. I mean, overall budget versus worldwide gross, it made 10 times what it cost. But
the Saw movies are consistent, and they're not expensive to make. They never get big stars. You're never going to see Brad Pitt in the Saw movies.
No, but they're just so far removed from the first couple.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
Do you think I think Underworld's going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think it's guaranteed at least 20 million.
Oh, easy.
I think the fans of the first two movies.
I think I talked about this once, you know, we are in a recession. Movies are recession proof because no matter where we are, you can people complain about the prices. You can still afford. You can go to the matinee for $5, whatever. It's still a very affordable thing to do. And that's, I think, and then it's cold out here. So you got a lot of people going for that.
Right. But. Well, and also in comparison to other things like sporting events.
Oh, yeah.
Movies are still.
Concerts.
Concerts in particular. Movies are still a great value for the money.
Yeah.
You know, you can get entertained for $8 for two and a half hours. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I still think, they'll be good numbers, but what do we got? Underworld, Inkheart,
that's number five.
Underworld's going to win.
Yeah, I think everything.
Walmart's going to finish second.
I think Inkheart will maybe beat Notorious, and that's about it.
Yeah, so. That sounds good.
All right. Well, we got to go to break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up with the DVDs. Well, welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're going to finish you up here after that brilliant segment talking about Speed 2, Cruise Control, and Last Chance Harvey.
And The Adventures of Priscilla.
Yeah, and Tootsie. They're all related, trust me. It all works out. But we're going to start off with the DVD roundup. I usually do this. Usually Neil introduces it, and I do the whip sound.
Got it.
So sorry, I didn't prep you for that. Do you want to go first? Your pick of the week.
Well, you've got two, right? So why don't you do one? I'll do one, and
I can share. My two are very similar. They're almost the same movie. The first one is Saw 5, which it's just because I like the Saw movies, and I also say supposedly, as I was told, I'm going to actually have my quote on a cover box in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, and it was funny because it doesn't come out till May. So right now,
there's that much of a lag time?
Yeah, wow. At least that's what it said on. I found some Australian site that sold DVDs, and it says due out in May, like 13th or something like that. But yeah, so my quote's going to be, it's funny because out of the blue, I get this email from the people running it, and they're like, hey, can we use your quote? And I'm like, can you send me a DVD? And they're like, it won't play in your player. I'm like, I don't care.
Like, I just want a copy.
I want a tease. Like, it's like right there over Tobin Bell's head.
That is such a tease when they do that too, because like I remember when I sent a quote to the studio for Sex Drive.
Yeah.
I was so hoping. I'm like, oh, they're going to love this. And of course, they had this laundry list of quotes that they put in the trailers. Not mine.
Yes. One of them was mine.
I did see that.
I bumped you out of that.
I thought that was awesome. And I was also very, very jealous.
It's weird because I usually don't, I don't troll for quotes, but it is kind of fun to happen. But yeah, Saw 5, unrated, blood and guts, lots of fun stuff. And then very similar, The Notebook is out on a limited edition sort of box set. And it's not like double disc or triple disc or anything like that. But it's like got all this like swag in it. It's got like this, which is cooler than the movie. I mean, the movie's like, whatever, love. I love you forever, baby, man. But like it has like this scrapbook and it's noting, and you have these little things that you can put pictures in as you got stickers. It is really kind of cool.
That's so cute.
Let me tell you guys, whoever you are, get it for your wife for Valentine's Day. She will melt. I'm a manipulative bastard. That's what
I mean. There is nothing wrong with that, by the way. My movie is City of Ember. It was an adaptation of a kids lit book that just
better than Inkheart.
I thought so. I mean, it just got buried at the end of last year. And it had Saoirse Ronan, the girl from Atonement, as the lead, and Bill Murray made a very amusing villain.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, I love the set design, and I thought it was a really neat story, and it made like $1.50 at the box office.
Nobody saw this.
Yeah, it got crushed. I mean, I think I've read numbers anywhere between 38 and 55 million for the budget. It made worldwide, I think, $16 million. Yeah. They took a bath on it.
They totally did.
Well, and that's a pity because it's much better than you would think.
Well, there's been a wash of Fox Walden movies, because that was Fox Walden, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Fox Walden movies that have come out that haven't done very well. Some good, some bad. You know, I know you really liked Mr. Magorium, but that didn't do very well.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Nim's Island didn't. Oh, you hated that.
I did not like Nim's Island. And I love Abigail Breslin. Yeah. She's just adorable, but no.
And what was the other one? Seeker, The Dark is Rising.
Oh, yeah. That one got crushed, too.
Aragon. There was a whole slew of these movies that are like these literary adaptations that haven't been doing well. Everyone's trying to find the next Harry Potter.
Yeah.
The thing with City of Ember, I thought it was a decent movie. I just thought that it was really hard to explain. It was really hard to see the trailer and know what it's about, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because there's more going. I mean, you can really distill it down and saying people live underground and these kids kind of have to try and get them out. But there's so much more to it.
Absolutely.
Does the setup take so long to explain?
Usually when you've got a movie like that, it opens up with a big, lengthy piece of narration. You're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
This story is going to be a much bigger than they probably have the time to tell, and that's why you've got the narrator.
Yeah.
I always remember that from Adaptation. You know, yeah. I never looked at narration the same way again after seeing Adaptation.
Adaptation has so many truths to it.
But I still enjoyed the movie very much. And if you missed it when it was in the theaters, which wouldn't have been hard because I think it was in the theaters for about, I don't know, 90 minutes.
It was getting trampled by Beverly Hills Chihuahua. At the time.
Oh, God. I would say if you've got, kids... You know, between the ages of, 8 and 12.
Yeah.
I think they'd get a kick out of it.
Older kids. I wouldn't bring it home for your five-year-old.
Nah.
Yeah.
No. So. Save the, they're too busy wanting to do Kung Fu Panda.
Wait for Beverly Hills Chihuahua to come out and show that to your five-year-old.
Oh, yikes. You know, you always tell me
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
I didn't see it. But you always tell me that, you know, when my son gets older, that, you know, my standards are going to drop and then I'm going to have to start watching this stuff. I'm still going to fight to the bitter end.
Well, actually, you know, even I said this last week to Kristen, part of the fun of Paul Blart, why I enjoyed it is because my son, I went with him and it was just me and him. I usually have my two kids in tow, but it was just me and my oldest. And we went and we had a good time. It was just a really nice father-son moment. And that of course impacts the movie. My thing. So, I have a stinker. My stinker is Henry Poole is Here. I hated that movie.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. Do you have a stinker?
That's what I've heard. Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think. I saw a quick list before I came over. Well, I can't list anything that you've listed as your recommendations.
You
right?
can say Saw 5.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Saw 5, but that's just me. And I like the Saw franchise. I like the idea of it, but the last three...
You don't like where it's going.
No, I don't. I don't. Which is why I was hoping they would wrap it up with the sixth one, because I know that that's Tobin Bell's signed through at least six.
Yeah.
The movie just isn't the same. Like, he gets less screen time, they get less interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, speaking of wrapping up, we got to wrap it up. Let's real quick. Underworld is a preemptive suck.
Preemptive suck. Sorry.
Inkheart, we both said kind of rocks or kind of sucks.
Kinda
and
sucks.
Last Chance Harvey, we both said kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks. Wow.
We got to go. Sorry, Brendan Fraser.